Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Junk Baller Podcast. My name is Michael Greenwood, and as always, I'm here with my good friend, Kevin. Kevin, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just enjoying baseball season before the Eagles cult kicks into full gear.
Yeah, and that's no one wants that. No one wants that. But we do have someone here who might want that, because I think she is an Eagles fan. I'm pretty sure she is. Okay, welcome, Tab. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. So you are the first person that actually has asked to be on the podcast.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. So this is, that was, remember how I said we're making history? Mm-hmm. You're going to be the first podcast we've ever done. Mm-hmm. You're also making history by being the first person to want to be on this podcast. Everyone else was just forced. They had to be on this podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. I know. Yeah.
Maybe that's not a good sign that I asked. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
I have one question before we get into kind of the flow of things. How long have you been listening to the podcast?
A couple months. I mean, as soon as you sent it to me, I've definitely listened to a few episodes, but I try not to go back too far because it's just like, well, you're talking about things that already happened. Like, why would I go back and listen to that? So, yeah, I've tried to stay up to date on what's going on in the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Legit.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that was when I think we reconnected back in when I saw you at pickleball or something like that.
Yeah. Or volleyball. There's been so many events.
Yeah. And it's funny because she now goes to my old church and I left pretty much as soon as she started going.
Yeah. That's why I left.
No,
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. And then Tab asked Kev right before we started, how long have you known Michael? And Kev and I both said too long.
It's the standard answer we give people usually.
Yeah. No one likes me. It's okay though. But yeah, let's get right into it because we've got a lot going on in the world of baseball. I think the big thing right now is Aaron Judge. Mm-hmm. Aaron Judge is just on another level. Have you seen any of him?
Yeah, we were actually talking about him today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where?
At work. Yeah. With the, you know, home run chase and all that stuff. And everybody's like, and what about Barry Bonds and like Mark McGwire? And I'm like, all right, so I'm going to start looking up like all the home runs that they hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he one of the fastest to get to 50? I don't think so.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
He's the fifth player overall to hit 50 home. Or no, is it the fifth?
No, I think they. Yeah, the fifth. The third or the fifth. No, it was the,
why don't we just go?
We just listened to it on the highlights. How do we not remember this?
Well, how about we go for the middle ground and we go for four? Is that good?
It might be. We could be wrong. But yeah. Anyway, it was. He's very exclusive company, people. And then he had Player of the Week this week. He hit seven home runs.
Yes, it's in ridiculous. Six games.
In, oh my gosh. Dude is on another freaking level.
You're looking at his stats right now, and these are like stats that you would see for like an all-star when their season's over.
Oh, yeah.
51 home runs, 122 RBIs, an OPS of 1.202, and there's still a month left of the season. If it wasn't for the cold start, he had a really slow start to the beginning of the year. He couldn't hit to save his life, and then once he got ejected earlier in the year, I think that just turned the tide for his season.
Yeah. I saw a meme earlier today where it was, you know, the scene in The Office where Michael and Pam are angry at each other because Michael is dating Pam's mom. And Michael says, I'm going to start dating your mom even harder. Yeah. And someone photoshopped it so that way it's like, stop pitching to Aaron Judge. And then it's the teams that are pitching to Aaron Judge. You know what? I'm going to pitch him to even harder. It's just, why are you pitching to Aaron Judge? I don't get it. Do you understand? Why are they pitching to him, Tab? Why?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't either, but, you know, maybe they're like, oh, I've got the upper hand. I can beat Aaron Judge. No, you can't. Like,
no. Just go after everyone else in the lineup. The Yankees lineup, other than Soto and Judge.
A couple of them have been starting to be a little bit better at the plate recently.
Yeah, but still. Yeah. And the Yankees are doing well overall. They're picking it up.
They've stabilized. They had a really rough June and July. And thankfully, though, Baltimore has not been playing so well recently either.
Yeah.
So they had a series against Houston this weekend. This was a big chance for the Yankees to really have the series win against Colorado and build up a little bit more of a sizable lead over Baltimore. And that's still going to come down to the wire. The AL East is just ridiculous every single year.
Yeah, that's just how it is. But yeah, the Phillies, on the other hand, they've been sucking a lot recently.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unluckily, JT had a couple home runs on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. I actually didn't watch Saturday and Sunday, so maybe I'm the bad luck with this. I shouldn't say this publicly, but I know that Taylor's probably going to come at me like, yeah, you can't watch any more games now with it. But yeah, the Phillies have been struggling mm-hmm. really hard. And hopefully this past series was a little bit of a turn. But what do you think? What do you think their problem is?
I feel like they just kind of they need to get their act together, for lack of a better term. Like, I don't know, maybe they're in their heads too much, or they need to like start focusing on like playoffs. So
they should just focus on the playoffs?
They should just focus
instead of actually trying to win games. It's like, oh, we're already in the playoffs.
No, I mean, I think they should like, that's a good question. I mean, I feel like they shouldn't be worrying too much right now, mm-hmm. but like just focusing on like maybe being healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because they've had a lot of injuries recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, not worry too much.
So you're saying don't worry too much.
Yeah.
Okay. I heard someone say, I think it was Chris Rose, he was talking about it, that the Phillies look tired. Like they're a little bit older. They just looked a little bit tired and like lethargic, and they needed some like time off to like regroup. And I kind of get it. And they played a little bit better after like a couple guys had a couple days off. But it kind of makes sense. Like I think they got in this, the motions, and they just needed to like to regroup. And I don't know, they're a little bit of a veteran team with it. They're all like, a lot of the best players are 30 plus. So
that's true.
I think they're too good to fall apart like that. As long as they remain steady and just, you know, continue to chug along, they still got a 6-game lead in the National League East.
Yeah.
So as long as they don't suffer a total collapse in September,
yeah,
I still see them winning the division.
They do have a tough week. They are facing the Astros and the Braves. They luckily were at home, but it's still tough. Still tough. Yeah. I don't have anything more. Everyone that is listening to this podcast knows what's going on with the Phillies. Mm-hmm. The Yankees, hopefully people know, because you informed them.
Yes, I did.
But next news, one first baseman retired from baseball. What's his name? It starts with the V. Anyone?
Volpe?
No. V? Anyone?
Victorino?
No. Joey Votto. All right, come on. Joey Votto retired. Is he a Hall of Famer? Yeah, I'm looking at you. Yeah.
You know better than I. I haven't seen his stats.
You don't know his stats?
No, not off the top. No, I'm not as good as you guys are with all that stuff. Oh, my goodness.
But you know who Joey Votto is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Would you consider, if you, just off the top of your head, do you think Joey Votto is a Hall of Famer?
I'm going to say no, and I'm probably wrong.
Okay. Why do you say no?
I mean, he's been with the Cardinals forever, right? Is that the right person?
That's not the right person. Oh, wow, shoot. Man.
I told you.
they both wear red.
They both wear red, yeah. But red, the thing is, the team's name is the Reds.
The Reds, yeah.
So Joey Votto, his career stats, he's a career 294 hitter mm-hmm. with 356 homers and 1,100 RBIs with an OPS of 920, which is definitely Hall of Fame level. 64.5 WAR, Hall of Fame level, MVP, 6-time All-Star, Gold Glove. But the big thing about Joey Votto is his on-base percentage. He has a .409 on-base percentage, which I heard a stat that if Joey Votto went 0 for his last 400 something at bats, basically almost a full season of not having a hit, he'd have still a higher on-base percentage than Ichiro. Which is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think he's a Hall of Famer. What do you think?
I think he's in the very upper tier of the very good category.
Okay.
I mean, if he like the span from 2010 to say 2017,
mm-hmm.
I think that's Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
But I think I've said this before on the podcast. I think you have to have a little bit longer of a like dominance as a player
mm-hmm.
to really make it as a Hall of Famer.
I mean, in 2021, he had 36 homers and 99 RBIs with a .938 OPS. Like, that's pretty good after a couple years of being an average to good player.
But 2021 was an anomaly out of those seasons.
I mean, the year before, like, he was in 2020, he still had 11 homers and 22 RBIs and an 800 OPS. Yeah, like that's
2020.
Yeah, I know, but it's still 11 homers in 54 games.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
But it's like 12, 15, 36, 11, 14.
Yeah.
It's almost like a Brady Anderson kind of thing.
Yeah. He still got on base a lot. He still was on base a lot.
He did.
That's the one thing that he did. Yeah. Yeah. You have to let us know. Yeah. I think he's a Hall of Famer, but I got two people here that are saying no.
Now, what was his, it's WAR, right, is yeah. like the newest stat that people are focusing mm-hmm. on with
yeah.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah, WAR, it's wins above replacement. Basically, right. if a replacement level player were to replace you, like how many wins, I'm botching this.
It's the number of wins the player adds to the team above what a replacement would be. So say take a normal baseball player, mm-hmm. quote unquote normal, and you place him in place of someone like Joey Votto. How many more wins would Joey Votto have over the average first yeah. baseman, pretty right. much?
To put in perspective, Mike Trout has like an 80-something WAR, and he's still playing. Like right. Mike Trout is very, very good. But yeah, I'm curious what people know. I think mm-hmm. I put a poll out. I think it was 100% that people thought, that people, the people that voted. I know sometimes people don't vote on the things. It bothers me, but I'm not going to let everyone know that, even though I just did. let's move on. I'm curious what people will say about that with Joey Votto. But in the other news, the White Sox and the Mariners have both dismissed their managers. Now, both of them, I think, don't deserve to be dismissed. Mostly because Pedro Grifol,
mm-hmm.
I'm definitely botching that too. He got fired from the White Sox. Now, the White Sox are absolutely horrible, as everyone knows, but what are you going to do with that team?
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah,
what are you going to do with that team?
I'm just wondering why they didn't just wait until the end of the year to let him go and not in the middle of August.
Or yeah. I mean, now he gets to be like, yeah, well, at least I wasn't manager for the entire year with this awful, almost historically bad team. It is a horse historically bad, but it's yeah. could be the worst team of all time.
Well, now Grady Sizemore gets to step up to the plate.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for Grady. Kind of feel bad.
Yeah, they lost their 100th game yesterday, so.
Jeez.
They just keep chugging along.
Gosh.
So they're 31-100, so if the MLB record is 120 games lost in a year, they got to go 21, they got to lose 21 games for the rest of the year. And I think that's very doable, considering how bad the White Sox have been.
Yeah.
They've lost 15 of their last 16 games, I think, or something
it's
ridiculous.
It's so pathetic.
So,
it's pathetic. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so the White Sox dismissed their manager, Grifol, and then Scott Serevicius for the Mariners got dismissed.
Interesting. Did they say why?
They said they needed a new voice in the locker room, in the clubhouse. But here's the thing. I feel like he was on the hot seat ever since he gave up that. He brought in Robbie Ray to face Pedro Alvarez in the playoffs. And Yordan Alvarez. And Yordan Alvarez took him 450 feet to center field on like the first or second pitch.
I think the Mariners are just looking for a fall guy.
Yeah.
After blowing a 10-game lead in the AL West.
Freaking Astros. Yeah. Gosh, come on, Seattle.
And I don't think it's his fault necessarily that the team can pitch very well, but can't hit.
They are absolutely horrible. Their best qualifying hitter at one point was batting .214.
Yeah.
That's pathetic. Bad. It's pathetic. It's I can hit. No, I can't. I maybe I could.
And in the seasons previous, like, he's brought his teams like to consecutive 90-win seasons.
Yeah. I think they just needed a fall guy.
Yeah.
Apparently he found out via social media before the team even told him.
That is terrible.
Yeah.
If that was true.
Yeah. Awful. Would you like to be fired by that? Hey, they posted on the social media.
No, I would miss it because I don't have any social media. I'd show up and be like, wait a minute, I was fired? What?
You don't have any social media? I think we're friends on Facebook.
I lost my password to Facebook and I haven't been on it in like 2 years.
Oh my goodness. All right, yeah. Well, I know she's not going to share this episode on her Facebook profile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on. That's kind of like the catching up on what's going on in baseball. There's probably more that we're missing, but let's get to know Tab a little bit. Are you ready?
I think so.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right. Let's go. So you wanted to be on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I know you like baseball a lot. Mm-hmm. I am curious to know what some of your background is in baseball and softball growing up and what it is now.
Yeah, of course. So I grew up playing softball pretty much from like, you know, beyond kindergarten to up to 3 years in college. And it's been a huge part of my life. I then went on to coach for about 5 seasons at the high school that I attended. So, yeah, it's like my favorite sport. It's always been on in the background at home.
Good.
Yeah, been a big part of my family. So, yeah, that's my background on that. Yeah. So.
Now, when you were coaching, were you like the head coach of the team?
I was the head coach, yeah. Mm. Yeah, so my college career, I was recruited to play at a Division III school. And then things with the education in the school weren't great, so I ended up transferring to a Division II school. That was nationally ranked, but I got injured. And so right after that, one of my friends asked me to be, it was basically a position coach. I was coaching the outfield, and then he was ready to kind of step down. He was offered it to me. And so that's how I got the job. And then I ended up being the head coach there for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There'd be times when I was going through PT where we would hear what you're going on, what's going on with the team and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a lot of stories.
Is there any that you can share?
I mean, do you want to know, like...
Give us something juicy.
So there was one time where we were playing a team, and I go back to the vans where we, like, transported everybody, you know, to the game, and a foul ball must have hit the windshield, and it spider cracked. Like, it was terrible. And of course, like, I think this is like one of the first times I was allowed to drive the vans because I wasn't old enough when I was initially hired. There was insurance policies where you had to be 25. I was 23 when I was hired.
Oh my gosh.
So I think it was like one of the first times I like drove the vans, and I come back and I'm like, how do I even like call the athletic department about this and tell them, so there's like a huge crack in the windshield. And I was like freaking out. I think that was actually the closest I was to cursing in front of the team. I was like, oh. Anyway, but like, so just different things like that happened. You know, there's transportation issues, but there was like so many like fun moments as well.
Yeah.
Like one of my best players, like the team was like okay. Mm-hmm. And we faced like one of the better teams in the league, and she hit like back-to-back home runs like in at bats against a really, really good pitcher. And then like one of my first years I coached, we won off of a walk-off bunt.
Oh.
Which was like one of the most exciting moments of my coaching career, because like I had given the girl like a fake bunt. I had like a runner on first, and it was like the last inning, and I gave my batter like a fake bunt steal. So my runner was already stealing.
Yeah.
Like she was on the way, but my batter misunderstood the sign and she ended up just bunting. And I like panicked because I was like, that's not what I told you to do. And so like the runner's like coming around, but then like the fielder like overthrew first. And so then I sent her, and that's how we won, which was on a walk-off bunt.
That's kind of how the Little League World Series just ended. Yeah. You won on a walk-off bunt. Look at that.
I know.
Look at that.
Do you favor using the bunt when you coach?
I do like it. Yeah. I mean, I think the player has to be really good at it. And I even taught, cause I know this is not common in baseball, in softball, there's something called a slap. Do you know, like the slap hit?
Yeah.
So I, very early on taught some of my girls to slap, and would try to utilize that as well. But it's tough, like, coaching at a private school when, like, the talent might not be there a year. So, like, on a more talented team, I would, like, do a lot of that stuff. And then some years I was just like, all right, let's just catch the ball.
you catch the ball like this.
Use two hands. Oh, gosh. Yeah, so, yeah. If I could, I would utilize it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember if you said, are you coaching right now?
No. So I stepped down this was my first season stepping down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you ever get back into it?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if I didn't have to like really worry about money, like I would coach at the high school level like all the time.
Okay. But
career wise, like I am trying to focus on my career a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So that's why I decided to step down. But
that's smart.
I know.
That's smart.
I miss it so much though.
Yeah. I miss playing baseball. I miss I coached Little League, but it's not the same because it's just they don't know what they're doing. But I like it, but there's definitely times I'm like, all right, I can't be doing this and everything. Yeah. Okay, what is your favorite memory from being a Phillies fan?
Being a Phillies fan? I actually have to say it's more recent, probably the 22 like World Series, which let me explain. So I was in middle school.
I was about to say they lost.
I know. So I was like in middle school, like the last time they were in the World Series, and I barely remember the 08 one, and I kind of remember the 09 World Series. Like I really just remember like CC Sabathia.
He remembers it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think was it Pedro Martinez?
For us?
Yeah, yes. For us. Yeah. So that's my memory of like 09. Mm-hmm. But on like a slightly sad note, my grandfather passed away like February 23. Mm-hmm. And so the 22 World Series and the Super Bowl were like really big because it was like, oh, he got to experience that like before.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he passed. That's why. And I also love the fact that we like got a new coach and then like all of a sudden made it to the World Series, you know?
Yeah.
So different, there's different like reasons, but yeah. Also, like we waited so long.
So long. Yeah. I mean, we got a guy here who hasn't had a below 500 season in what, 27 years? An entire lifetime? Like, I think it's pretty much been your entire life. You've never seen a team below 500.
Just about, I think. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, you know, Phillies are the most losing franchise in history.
I unfortunately learned that listening to this podcast.
See, look at that. We bring awareness to the issues. The losingest team in baseball history.
We educate our fans.
Yeah.
We
educate.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay. And then I have one more question before we move on to trivia. Mm-hmm. Why do you hate Bryce Harper?
another one who
yes,
hates Bryce Harper.
I don't know what it is. Yeah. We keep bringing on Harper haters.
I know. So when I listened to Emma's episode, I kind of definitely agreed with what she said. I feel like there is like some semi-disingenuousness with him, mm-hmm. especially with being like in Philly. Like, for example, like, I'm sorry, Jason Kelce. Like, I have friends that saw him picking up stuff at Apple Walnut Cafe in Broomall. Like, that's like how local he is. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It just seems like Bryce Harper is kind of putting on a show. But when he was first signed, I was concerned about his injuries because I known like with the Nationals he was injured like all the time.
Yeah.
And so I was really concerned about that.
Yeah.
With him coming here.
His back injuries have been my biggest concern because it seems like because he's got a very violent swing, mm-hmm. and every once in a while he's like, yeah, my back's bothering me. I'm like, oh my God, dude, you're 31, 32 now. I'm like, I can't be having back injuries and you're thinking about getting a contract extension past 39 years old. I'm like, no. No, so the disingenuous thing where Jason Kelce being in Broomall, mm-hmm. I know the town that Harper lives in because I was hanging out with people in that area and I know that he was like in that area and he was actually like went to shopping and all that. Mm-hmm. So there is that, I wouldn't say that, but I get that he does play up the Philly thing with all the fanatic, like what's the term? Not patronize, like
it's patronizing a little bit.
Yeah. It's pandering. That's the word. He definitely panders to the Philadelphia fans. Now, I do think that he is kind of a Philly guy. He's got a fiery personality. I think that fits well, but I think a little bit of his maybe a little bit disingenuous. Yeah. But
I think I mentioned this in the last podcast too. I think he tries a little too hard sometimes.
Yeah.
It reminds me a bit of A-Rod when he's on a Fox podcast. Mm-hmm. He's trying too hard to be liked by people.
A-Rod.
As opposed to being authentic. Yeah. That's kind of the vibe I've gotten from Harper at times.
So I think that Harper's a little bit more authentic. I think Harper's authentic when he talks into like the general media maybe, but during Philadelphia, like to the fans mostly, he definitely, I think, patronizes and panders a little bit. But I remember his interview during the All-Star game with MLB Network. He was definitely more genuine. I didn't feel A-Rod definitely is. He wants to be liked by everyone. And if he doesn't, he's definitely crying at night for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. And so I wanted to make sure we got that out, mm-hmm. because we definitely have another Harper hater on. And, you know, we had one with Emma. Mm-hmm. I don't think that Nichols or Taylor hate Harper. I don't. Those have been our other guests.
No, but Nichols has a deep seat of hatred for Neris.
Hector Neris, who just
me too.
Wow.
Well, he got released by the Cubs and he got picked up by the Astros.
I cannot tell you how annoying it is that he has a world championship ring. He was with the Astros when we lost in 22. Oh, it makes me so angry.
Seems like she hates Hector Neris more than Harper. I'll be okay with that.
I was teasing Nichols about, I'm like, hey, Neris is free.
Yeah, I
come
almost
back to Philly.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm good without Neris. I like him. He does have the most strikeouts for a reliever in Philly's history.
I know, but it was. I always had a heart attack every single time he stepped on the mound. I'm like, what is going to happen? Are you going to lose us the game?
He wasn't that bad. He wasn't. No, he wasn't that bad. No, 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 no. No,
I beg to differ.
All right. Well, let's get into the next segment of the Junk Bar Podcast with Tab. We're going to quiz her. You know, we've been doing top fives, fun facts, and trivia. We might be introducing some new stuff soon, but we'll see. But right now, we're going to give Tab 5 questions on the Phillies and see if she can get them right.
I am nervous about this. When I've listened, I'm like, oh, I got it. But now I'm like, Mike's going to stump me. He's
I try to be fair.
All right.
But we'll see. You know, I want to challenge you because I feel like you know your stuff a little bit now, yeah. Except for Joey Votto being on the Cardinals, apparently. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Question number one. Who is the Phillies' all-time hits leader?
Hits leader.
Now, do you want multiple choice or do you think you can answer this?
Give me multiple choice.
Okay.
Now can I clarify?
Yeah.
Ask a clarifying question without giving anything away.
Sure.
Because that's what I kind of did last time.
Sure.
When you say Phillies all-time hits leader, you mean hits leader all-time for the Phillies?
Yes.
Or for their career?
For the Phillies.
For the Phillies.
Phillies. For okay. The Phillies all-time hit leader.
Got
yeah.
It.
Okay. The choices are Mike Schmidt, Larry Boa, Jimmy Rollins, or Pete Rose?
I'm I remember Jimmy Rollins, I think, reaching 1,000. But I actually think that he might be the all-time hits leader. It's either him or Pete Rose, maybe.
What's your answer?
I'm going to go with Jimmy Rollins.
There you go. Look at that.
Oh,
he got over 1,000. He got over 2,000. Yeah. With the Phillies. Mike Schmidt was the former hits leader until Jimmy broke it, I think in 2014. I think that's the year he broke it. But yeah, all right, there you go. Yeah, just Pete Rose did not have that many hits for the Phillies. I threw that in because he's the all-time hit leader, but he's not the Phillies' all-time hit leader. Yeah. Yeah. You know, see, I try to
confuse you.
Thank you
for clarifying.
Yeah. All right. So you're 1-for-1. Right. Who was the manager of the 1980 World Series?
Oh my goodness.
I'll give you multiple choice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Terry Francona, Dallas Green, John Vukovic, or Charlie Emanuel?
Is it Dallas Green?
Yes. Look at you. 2-for-2.
All right.
Look at you. All right. Let's go to number 3. Which big free agent did the Phillies sign in 2003? Bobby Abreu, Robert Person, Scott Rowland, or Jim Thome? Don't you laugh.
I only recognize one name.
Which name do you recognize?
Jim Thome.
That's the only one you recognize?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Wow, not the legendary Robert Person.
Okay.
Who is that?
You're giving her hints here. You're giving her hints.
Is it Robert Person then?
Is that your answer?
I feel like it should be because I'm not confident.
Is that your answer?
Yeah.
No.
Oh,
God, no. Robert Person is, I think he pitched for the Phillies 1 year. The only reason why he's known is because he hit a 3-run home run and a grand slam as a pitcher.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
You should have been with the only one you knew. That was Jim Thome.
Oh, shoot.
Gosh.
Kevin. What are you doing? I'm kidding.
Robert Person is a one-off. Bobby Abreu. You don't know Bobby Abreu?
Actually, I do know that name.
Or Scott Rowland?
I don't know
Scott Rowland's a Hall of Famer.
I know Bobby.
Wow. All right. You're 2-for-3. You don't deserve to answer that one correctly. All right. Number 4. Which season did the Phillies set the franchise record for wins? 2009, 2010, 2011, or 1980?
Is it 2011?
It is 2011. Okay. All right. You're 3-for-4. All right. Can you get a fifth one?
We'll see.
You get the fifth one. Who is the Phillies' all-time saves leader? I should have put Hector Neris as an option. Jose Mesa, Billy Wagner, Jonathan Papelbon, or Brad Lidge?
I'm going to be mad if it's Papelbon, but I'm going to go with Brad Lidge.
Well, you're going to be mad because it's Jonathan Papelbon.
Yeah. Papelpon.
Yeah, Papel Poopy, as some people call him. Yeah. So we have Philly's records for in like bullpen records. Jonathan Papelbon has the all-time leader in saves. We hate Jonathan Papelbon. And Hector Neris has the most strikeouts for a reliever in Philly's history. And not a lot of people like Hector Neris. So we're not known for records that we like, unlike the Yankees, who have a lot of records and with players that they actually like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I know the audience can't see this, but
it's okay. You haven't won a
fake crying for you.
It's okay. You haven't won a World Series since 2009, which is a year less than we have. So
yeah,
we're pretty similar.
Do I want to be similar to you?
No, I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so.
No, that's got to change.
Yeah,
that's got to change.
Yeah. 3 for 5. Not bad.
Not terrible.
Not terrible. Yeah. You think that was difficult?
No.
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 Well, then you should have gotten 5 for 5. Oh, you didn't think it was difficult. Jeez. All right. So, good job. I'll give you that.
Okay.
I'll give you that. But now we're going to head into our main section. And the reason why Tab wanted to be on the podcast, and she wanted to explain what she thinks makes a good manager and a good team culture, given that she coached and has been a player too, but also giving her perspective of what makes a good team and culture in MLB.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll ask you some questions, and then we can kind of go about it. And if we get to all of them, we get to all of them, but we'll see. But we want to get your perspective of what makes a good team management and culture. All right. So what are some of the qualities that you think make a good manager?
So when thinking about that, I definitely think a good manager has to be like aware of like their players and their skill set. I think they have to surround themselves with a good coaching staff, and being aware of like what's going on in the minors and how people are doing on injuries and different things like that. And a lot of that comes from like communication, like amongst coaches and different things behind the scenes. What else did I put? Staying calm in high pressure situations, I think, is super important, because if they're not calm, then that energy is just going to, like, you know, go into the team, and they're going to read their coach and be like, oh, well, he's panicking, so that's not good. So
Boat's sinking.
The boat is sinking. Yeah. So those are just some of, like, the qualities that I, like, came to mind with making a good manager.
Okay. Continue.
And the lineup. And, of course, like, I mean, that's kind of, like, a given. But, like, I think there's other qualities that are more, like, that should be highlighted a little bit more when you're looking at a good manager.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think any managers, are there any managers that you know of right now that you think stand out?
Well, I mean, I'm going to obviously say Rob Thompson, but like,
do you think he does a good job?
I think he does. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And why do you think he does a good job based off of what you know?
From what I know, I mean, he's definitely calm. I think he knows his team really, really well. I think it's very clear that he like gives leadership over to some of the players, and they really kind of take charge on like creating that good team culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like he has like a lot of good coaches like around him.
Yeah.
That he trusts. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You got anything?
Well, you mentioned the different relationships between players and coaches. Do you think the manager should be schmoozing up to say upper management somehow, or develop a good relationship there? Would that be a quality that needs to stand out to really be an effective manager, not just on the field, but off the field?
I would think so. I mean, obviously there needs to be communication between like the front office general manager and the manager, because like if, you know, the manager is bringing up, hey, we need like these key players and, you know, you need to spend money for them, then GM's like, well, no, we're not spending that. I don't know if that actually happens, but it's just like an idea. So I think there needs to be communication on that end, because the manager's saying like, hey, here are our needs, and then the front office needs to follow up with that.
Yeah. Would you, like, if you had like a disagreement between upper management or the general manager and you as a coach, like how far would you go to like maybe make the changes that are necessary?
That's a good question. I mean, I think I would do it like respectfully, of just like not just like, oh, I see an issue, I'm going to go right to the main person, but being persistent is what I would say, is persistently saying like, hey, like we need this. Like, mm-hmm. can you step up and mm-hmm. help, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you see a lot of time with when a manager gets fired or a GM gets fired, normally the manager and the GM get fired together just because the GM wants to pick their manager. Mm-hmm. Just like with the Marlins, like the Marlins just got rid of their GM, Kim Ng, right?
Yes.
Was that her name? Yes. I think that was her name. And then they were talking about, because she brought in Schumacher. And Schumacher won Manager of the Year last year. And then they were talking about at the beginning of the year, like, oh, yeah, we're not going to extend him probably. And I'm like, he's going to get fired because he did a great job managing that team, but then he's going to get fired because the GM that brought him in got fired. I think that's really dumb. Just, I think Schumacher did a great job, and he shouldn't deserve to get let go. I hope he stays, but yeah, it's just, you see stuff like that, and it just gets me going with upper management and all that. So, okay, what makes a team culture better than others?
I think making sure that everybody kind of knows their roles is super important. Mm-hmm. And I want to already jump like the questions ahead because I know you say it later in the questions that you
said. I didn't prepare you at all.
This is just random. Yeah. Like I think people knowing like their roles is important because mm-hmm. if people are constantly...
Sorry, we got the Phillies game back on.
If people are unaware, that's just going to create like tension mm-hmm. and like, obviously you want like a healthy competition. You want people like striving to get better. But if there's like any kind of bitterness within the clubhouse because, oh, so-and-so is getting so much playing time and like, I'm not, and I don't know if that actually again happens. This is all pure speculation, but end of the day, you want like that healthy team culture. You want people working together.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, you say you were gonna. Looks like you were gonna say something.
Yeah, because there's some teams that you know I think are on two extremes. One, like they could be super disciplined and just you know not have any fun at all, and then there's the others who just like are wild and free and there's no control over your team. Mm-hmm. Have you had situations like that where you were like starting to slip into a disciplinarian too much or maybe laying things a little too loose on your team?
Oh, that's a good question. Definitely my last year coaching, I was probably a little bit too loose, but at the same time we were at like a tough spot. As I alluded to earlier, I coached for a small private school, and so when you like, you never really know like what talent you're going to have. And I was expecting to get actually like 8 freshmen, and I think I got 3. Ooh. So I only had actually 10 players that year, my last year that I coached. So I was definitely a little bit more lax because we were not in a good spot. Mm-hmm. But when I first started coaching, especially because I was young, I definitely had to be a little bit more like, these are my expectations. This is what I want to do. And I think everybody kind of responded like well, but I think at the same time, like there wasn't that much of like a mentorship because I was kind of like, all right, like this is the law. Like I'm laying it out. Like
I am the law.
I had to implement a burpee rule again, my first year coaching because people were talking too much. Like, oh, I mean, again, this was high school girls. So let's be real for a second.
High school girls talk?
Too much, especially during games. So like, yeah, there has to, I've definitely been like on both ends of like, I think I would actually rather, maybe not. I would probably rather be a little bit more disciplined because I think that quality and teaching that to like your players is very important rather than just being like, oh yeah, let's do whatever and have fun. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. There's time and place for that, but I'd rather lean a little bit more disciplined.
Gotcha. So, yeah. It is interesting seeing how the Phillies dynamic is with, like, it just seems like they have all these guys that just love each other, really, like, they care about each other a lot. And you can see that just with, you know, they have the veterans, but then they have some young guys that they're just like, they're literally kids. And the veterans literally view them as kids. But I think that they can also speak up too. And I think that's important for guys in the clubhouse, that if you're a rookie, you can speak up and have your voice heard. Because I feel like sometimes if you're a rookie and you're afraid to have your voice heard, you feel like you're not reaching your full potential with it. So yeah, that's how. Yeah,
Are you noticing any other teams in the league that are like that? Like, are the Yankees like that? How would you describe their team culture?
Well, historically, they've been a team that's really put a high value on being, you know, respectful and, you know, quote unquote classy. So that's why they
have facial hair.
Yeah, so like, I mean, unless you have like a mustache, you can't grow a full beard. You have, you know, your hair is done decently. And historically,
I can't imagine myself.
But it's just like a clean, respectful image that they want to put out there. I feel like they've been a bit looser recently. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when Jazz Chisholm Jr. came in as an example, a lot of people were questioning, is he right for the team, because he's a bit on the looser side of things.
Yeah,
but I think you need to have both. I still would prefer the Yankees to stick with tradition in some respects, but not all traditions are set in stone either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there are definitely some teams you see that are, they definitely vibe a lot better. I think the Guardians one, like, they don't have the most talent, but they definitely have a lot of chemistry on that team. And I can say the Cardinals last year, they were talking about how they had too many rookies and too many young guys in the team, and the veterans felt like they weren't able to voice their concerns and they wouldn't listen. So that's where they brought in Matt Carpenter, they brought in Sonny Gray, Kyle Gibson, all those guys to bring in a voice that was a louder voice and more veteran leadership. And it hasn't worked out well because the Cardinals have been just mediocre. I think the Phillies broke them when in the 2022. They have not been good since, also when Yachty left. Like, that's a good example. When veteran leadership like Pujols and Yachty leave a team, it's going to be a big loss.
Yeah.
Like, I think Schwarber's got one more year left on his contract after this.
Yeah.
I think he's going to get extended just because of the leadership we know he has for the team.
Yeah.
Even if he's just going to be a DH for the rest of his career, his leadership is so much more valuable than just letting him go and bringing a guy who can do something else.
And I would say, like, too, a lot of it is based on the players you have. So baseball's not like basketball where a lot of the energy can center around one guy.
Yeah.
Baseball is much more of a team sport.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So take, for example, the Marlins back in 2012, I think it was. They had all these stars, but they hardly won any games because they were just a bunch of individuals on a team. They weren't a team playing together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, next question. Would you rather have a calm manager, or would you rather have a fiery manager?
I'm very curious to actually hear your answers, because I personally would want a calm manager, and I was a calm manager.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like when you are expressing like your emotions, or like, let's just say anger, if you're upset with what's going on, your team is going to be like, oh wait, you're actually upset. This is bad. Like, but if you're like that all the time, I feel like some people are just like, oh, that's just who they are, and you never take them seriously.
Yeah.
But I also know that I feel like I at least noticed coaching women is a little bit different than coaching men. I feel like I've heard,
wait,
like,
no way.
Yeah. just in case people, you know, didn't know. But I've heard that like some guys like really need like a fire lit under their butt, for lack of a better term. Like, they need to be pushed.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree with that?
So for me, yes. So Kev knows this. I respond better to someone telling me I'm doing something poorly. When someone tells me I'm doing something well, I think I'm like, oh, I can't do anything better. Like, but there, I feel like there's always room to improve on something. And when someone tells me, hey, you're doing really well, I'm like, nah, I probably can be doing better. I need someone to tell me and motivate me, like, hey, no, you need to be better. Like, I remember John did this one time when I was at Frisbee Field. I was playing really poorly. Like, I knew I was, but no one was saying it. And then John just yells from the sideline, Michael, you are sucking so hard right now. You need to get it together. And you know what? We ended up coming back in that game and winning. And I played my butt off. And I know it was because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring up an example of a good manager, even though it's from football. Andy Reid. Just from knowing Andy Reid, the players that that played for him, and the chemistry that he's built with the teams, he brings in a lot of guys that are allowed to be themselves. Mm-hmm. Now, he's bringing guys that are that have had trouble in the past with the law, and also just with a lot of just like domestic abuse and stuff like that. There's been a lot of talk about that. The one thing Andy Reid does is he lets players be themselves, but there's a strict line of, hey, you need to get your job done if you want to be yourself too. He's very there's a lot of times that I've heard from Ike Reese saying that, you know, when Andy Reid spoke, you listened because there was that fire, like, you need to get this done, otherwise I'm going to let you know and have it in front of everyone. But he's going to let you be yourself because he wants you to be the best potential you can be. Mm-hmm. So it's a very relaxed atmosphere, but a very stern, like, maybe not a stern like background, but like a expectation. So it's a quiet expectation to do it right. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I would lean that way too, but again, I think it depends on the players and the team that you have.
Yeah.
So I think I'll go back to Joe Torre, who was stone-faced under every circumstance, whether they were down like 15 runs or they were up 15 runs. It didn't matter. He had the same expression, and he hardly got ejected, but they won games.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that had to do is that he put a lot of trust in his players to go out there and win,
yeah,
despite any character issues they might have.
Yeah.
Then you might go to like a manager before him, like Billy Martin, who was hired and fired 5 times by the Yankees. And got ejected countless times, and the team played well, but they were in chaos because of just, you know, all the stuff going on with the team. So I think there has to be some level of discipline, like you said, but you need that motivation to really push guys. I don't think having a manager who gets ejected a lot is a good thing necessarily.
Yeah, you don't see it as much anymore because of replay too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Continue.
But then there's guys like Aaron Boone who get ejected a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's necessarily good for the team, because there's a difference between, like, you know, sticking up for your players and then just letting your frustrations out.
There is a balance. And I think you remember Gabe Kapler.
Yes.
Terrible.
Yes.
So there was the one time, like, the team was struggling, and I remember he came out and tried to argue with an umpire. And you could tell how forced it was for him to get angry. Mm-hmm. He just was not that type of guy. And the players could probably tell that he was being forced, and it didn't even light a fire in them at all. And I just remember looking at his face. He's like, I could just tell it was not natural for him to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there are certain teams that do better with certain types of managers. Like, I think this Phillies team does better with Rob Thompson because he lets them be themselves, where I think Girardi was not letting the players actually, like, be relaxed. I mean, there was an expectation that was more strict. And he wasn't letting the young players play, where Rob trusts his guys a little bit more. It's like the player manager type thing instead of, like, the, I don't know, the other version of it. But yeah. So I personally, I'm watching the Phillies. Schwarber Schwarber's the speed demon that he is, got into second base. Yeah, I can't think of anything else in terms of, like, whether or not I would want a fiery or calm manager. I think that I would rather have – there's definitely a balance. I would rather have a guy that you want to play for. If there's not a guy you want to play for, then you're screwed. So, okay, next question. Would you rather have a manager that takes risks or is too conservative?
I was a little bit confused about this question. Like, what do you mean by, like, too conservative? Like, do you have an example of that?
So too conservative would be he, I guess more for, like, he plays the guys that there's no, like, changes in the lineup. There's no, he does what he's going to do no matter what. And he's like, no, we're going to play the best players. We're going to do this, like, all that time. Instead of, like, all right, I'm going to put this guy in because I'm going to take a chance on him to play because he did something well. I'm trying to think of a prime example with the Phillies. Like, I guess it would be if they came back, like, right now, Taiwan Walker is expected to pitch on Wednesday. That's what they said. Now, I think that's taking a risk, but also it's a sticky situation because he's getting paid a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that there needs to be a line of, I guess, would you rather have Rob Thompson be like, tell upper management, like, hey, no, I cannot pitch this guy anymore, or would you rather who would be like that would be taking a risk because he has to stand up for himself and best of the team, but or would you like, no, I'm just gonna do whatever management does, I'm gonna do whatever is like, oh, this is the thing, I'm not gonna make any changes type thing.
Well, with that example, I mean, with Walker specifically,
yeah,
like, I think that's when the coach needs to be like, yeah, like, I'm here to win,
yeah,
and I need to make decisions on, like, how to win, and
yeah,
if that means not pitching Walker, then that means not pitching Walker.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I guess that's, in that example, it'd be like taking risks. But, like, lineup stuff and positions, like, I think there's a time and a place for it. Like, mm-hmm. if you're right about to go into playoffs, it's not the right time to make risks mm-hmm. and, like, change things up. That's when you really want to have, like, everything in place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I thought of a better example. Do you remember in the World Series when they took out Wheeler and brought in Alvarado to yeah. face Alvarez? Mm-hmm. That was a risk.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't work out, but I knew what Thompson was trying to do mm-hmm. with it. And there was definitely some feet. Like, that's the thing. Like, is it going to be too risky to do that? Like, you're going to have, that's the thing a manager does. And you're going to have the blowback from, no matter if it works, if it works, it's genius.
Right.
So I'm curious what you would like to, what your thoughts are.
I think I would tend to lean a little conservative, but I think there's definitely a place for risk, mm-hmm. especially in the playoffs, I would say. You got to take those.
Yeah.
Even if it's like starting a pitcher on not normal days rest, just so you could close out a series.
Yeah.
The ultimate aim is to win the game.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to make those sacrifices and go unconventional to actually do that. And I think that's what makes great teams better than, say, the good mm-hmm. teams is yeah. taking the risk.
Yeah. I think I'm probably on the more side of, I would rather have a risky manager, not in the sense of like he's understandably just doesn't know when to stop making risks,
right.
but he's not afraid to give confidence to a guy that needs it and like a good feel for the game. Because I think with analytics, we've gotten very conservative with our decisions where it's like, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that because this is like letting a pitcher go. Like what? What were you going to say?
Well, the example I was thinking of with that was Matt Harvey in the World Series in 2015.
Yeah.
Where he was so fired up that they're pitching so well against Kansas City, he wanted to come back for the ninth inning.
Yeah.
And you know what? I was like, I think that's a fine risk to take. But the moment he let the first guy on base, you got to take him out of the game.
Yeah.
He was not taken out of the game yeah. in that circumstance. So I feel like that's a part of the risk, like taking it, but also you got to also be smart with what happens after that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no. Yeah, I think I could have phrased that question a little bit differently, but mm-hmm. I think we got the gist of
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And speaking of analytics, my next question is, should analytics have more weight than feel for the game?
I would say no.
Okay, and why is that?
I feel like...
You just don't like math?
I mean, I don't.
Who does?
Like math, yeah. But, I mean, really. I feel like there's too much of a risk for like paralysis by analysis. It goes in again into like, if you, as you just mentioned, like, oh, we're just going to do this because this is what the numbers are saying. Mm. And if you have like, if you know how your, you know, team is feeling that day, or if you know if somebody's having like an off day, like why would you then listen to yeah. analytics? I do think stats are super important because again, they tell the truth. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if somebody's not doing well at the plate, like your batting average is going to reflect that. So, it comes down to a balance,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah, I agree. Well, what do you got?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's an intuition that goes beyond the numbers for players. Just because a batter might be hitting like 330 overall as a batting average, that doesn't necessarily mean that he should be in a certain spot in a game. Like, he could be hitting 330 for like the whole season, but maybe he's like 150 against lefties,
yeah,
for instance. Or maybe the coach notices something as he's taking swings in batting practice, or is like, his swing isn't looking quite right.
Yeah,
maybe I should drop them a run or two down in line and put someone above him who's maybe hitting more consistently over the last couple of games.
Yeah,
and who would know better than the manager to see how their players are doing?
Yeah. An interesting example is Kyle Schwarber against lefties this year. I don't know what the stats are right now, but I know less than a month ago he was batting over 300 against left-handed pitching versus right-handed pitching being like in the 100s, which doesn't make any sense because he's never had these types of stats as a left-handed mm-hmm. hitter. But as a pitcher, as a manager, you want to go up against the lefty because normally statistics show that he's going to struggle against left-handed pitching. But this year, do you bring in that lefty and the bullpen to face him? Or do you like, you know what? He's been hitting lefties this year. Like maybe mm-hmm. he's just, so it's an interesting thing. I tend to lean a little bit more feel for the game than analytics. Now I definitely believe that analytics are a good part of the game, but if the game, you can, I think a manager specifically needs to rely more on an eye test with mm-hmm. it, because if you see your pitcher doing really, really well, but then he's going to be going through the third time through the lineup, which statistics show they do poorly after the third time through, but you want to give your guy more confidence you got to think about the future with it more than just this game. And you want to win the game most importantly, but you have to think, is this going to be best for my team moving forward, or am I going to lose the clubhouse because I took this guy out, because even though he's doing super well, mm-hmm. It's a hard line. It's a hard mm-hmm. line. All right, we got two more questions.
All right.
Would you rather have a player be a vocal leader or a lead by example leader?
I think there's a time and a place for both.
Okay.
Yeah. I think your quieter leader that kind of like comes alongside your team and like really leads by example can make a greater impact than maybe somebody who's just vocal all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it comes down to like a time and a place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. As a coach, I would much rather have like leaders like leading by example,
mm-hmm.
but it is important to have those people who are just going to like rally the team. And usually they don't coincide.
Okay.
Like at least what I've seen is that I've seen, you know, my vocal people that maybe don't exactly lead by example, but then I have like my quieter people that like lead by example and are hardworking.
Yeah. I think I would rather have someone be a vocal leader than a lead by example, but also like the vocal leader needs to actually prove it too and actually be like a good, like you can't have Garrett Stubbs be the vocal leader of the entire clubhouse because he's a backup catcher that can't really be a leader because he's just not that type of guy. But Kyle Schwarber has been in the league for a while, and I know he's the vocal leader of the clubhouse, but he also leads by example because he hits bombs. Mm-hmm. So I would rather have a vocal leader that backs it up more than a lead by example that is quiet, just because people see it, they hear him, and then he proves it. And so he's able to back up what he's doing, but he's also like that leader of the players instead of the manager. Because I think the manager, everyone, like as long as he respects the manager, that's the most important thing. But having that guy that the team can rely on when the manager might not have it that day, you're like, all right, you know, we're going to rally around this guy. Like, I think there's a balance with it.
What if he can't step up to the plate, the vocal leader?
I think that then a good leader would find other ways to be a good leader in that sense. Like, all right, he's struggling. Like Kyle Schwarber last couple of years, like he's been batting 199, low 200s, but this year he's batting 250. Like compared to other years, like he's just doing it differently. Now, I think he gets on base. I think a good leader would just find a different way. You got something to say?
Mm-mm,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a good leader, even no matter what sport, finds a way to be a leader in any way, whether that's finding a way to help other guys improve because he's struggling, or helping the manager figure out something that is wrong with his swing so that way he can figure it out. It's a balance. Yeah. You got something to say? Nah?
No.
Okay. Last question. Have you ever been a part of a team that had good or bad chemistry?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say like the first team I was on for college, Division III, mm-hmm. was not the best. I feel like, well, I mean, in my experience, I had never dealt with favoritism mm-hmm. up until I went to college. And so that's why my college experience wasn't the most fun. But I think I've seen favoritism really cause issues within like a team chemistry. And so it just causes too many issues. But then when I went to the Division II team, there was still favoritism there, but I think everybody just kind of understood their role a little bit more. And everybody kind of like we had a good leader that was actually not our starter.
Mm-hmm.
Our like head captain was not a starter every day, but the coach gave her all the responsibility to like rally the team.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where like that was cool to see, like how the coach like handled like her leadership team.
Yeah.
And it did create like a good team chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, sometimes if like the coach, you know, clearly does not make good choices, it can cause issues. I don't think I've ever had any like personality issues like amongst the team, but again, I'm naturally a very quiet person and I don't like to cause issues. So,
yeah, I've gotten that vibe from you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe there were issues and I just was like, all right, I'm here to do my job. Mm-hmm. I'm here to play, but
Bill Belichick type style. Do your job.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't it be the first time I've actually been called that? Anyway.
Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
Really?
I had a teacher call me that. Yeah.
What? Like in class? Or like, oh, you're just Bill Belichick?
Yeah. It was like during a lab. Yeah.
Were you cheating?
No, I'm not cheating. I think it was more because I just wasn't showing a lot of emotion, but that's a whole nother thing. but yeah, like, yeah, I guess okay. That answers the question.
Yeah. Mm. Have you been a part of a team that had good or bad chemistry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like I realize this question was like, oh, you ever had a team? I should just say.
Have you been on a team?
Yeah, have you been on a team? Actually, yeah. Because there's definitely teams that have had good chemistry and bad chemistry, but I'm more specifically a good example of that. Doesn't even have to be baseball.
Well, like Ultimate Frisbee? Or
yeah, it could be.
Well, define chemistry because, like, I think. When I think of good or bad chemistry, I think of like how well players play with each other and not necessarily the emotions or the actions of like outside the game itself.
Yeah, the chemistry plays itself on the field too. Yeah. Like you see the result on the field because of the chemistry.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've been on teams, as you and I both know, I mean, we've played on a bunch of teams together.
Mm-hmm.
Where you have teams where, you know, we get along great and we, you know, we're just having so much fun. But when we get on the field, we can't complete a pass. And we get shut out in games. And it's just by the half, we're just like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
But then there's like people, you know, who you would never want to talk to in your life. But then once you get on the field, it doesn't matter because you just gel so well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it also helps that we usually play with each other. So we have that good chemistry anyway. But I think there is a big personal aspect to it that ultimately decides whether you have a good or bad chemistry. You want to get along. You want to build a rapport. And you talk about the Phillies. The reason why they've been playing so well the last couple of years is because it's a team that really cares about each other.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think hopefully maybe some of the guys that are listening to this, but my Bridgeport team, when we went to States, that was probably the best team chemistry that I've ever experienced on a team before. You know, shout out to all you guys that who are ever listening, you know, Ray, Kyle, Justin, Alex, all those guys that were like the leaders and the old, because I was the younger guy. I don't even know if I was actually supposed to be a part of the team. Like I was on the bench most of the time, but I was, you know, doing my role. I knew my role as a player. But all those guys, they were a little bit older than me, but they were best friends but they knew that they were good. And they had a great, and also our coaches knew we were good and they let us be ourselves. But that team was so much fun to be a part of. Like they, and I got to play with them and I learned a lot from them too. And that was one of the best parts. Like we went all the way we lost in the state championship. And honestly, a big reason was one of our guys got hurt in the game before, our leadoff hitter got hurt and wasn't able to play. And that bring a lot of, was it the game before? But it was up in States. He got hurt like one of the games, and that was a big blow to morale. I know that. Mm. But it's amazing seeing like the guys that just, you know, that they are there for each other no matter what. Like if someone got hit, I knew that Kyle or Ray would be up and just stand up for the guys. Like I just know those guys would do that. So shout out to them.
So you would rather. Would you rather be a part of a team where you got along really well and you're best friends with that you didn't play so great? Or would you rather be a part of a team that, you know, were superstars and were winning everything, but off the field, it was just, you had no relationship whatsoever?
That's hard because I love winning. But I hate...
No way.
I hate losing more than I enjoy winning, as I put it. I don't know if I have an answer for that. I really don't. Because that's a hard question. Because most of the baseball teams that I was a part of, like, had decent chemistry. Just a lot of them weren't as talented. Like, our high school team sucked. Like, we just sucked. But we got along. Like, I don't know. That's a tough question. I'm not answering that question.
How about yourself?
That's also a tough question. think I'd actually much rather be a part of a team that, like, yeah, that, like, got along well and had good chemistry, even because that makes the games more enjoyable. Like, if you're a part of, like, a winning team, but you all hate each other, like, you're like, well, this takes out the fun. Trust me, I also enjoy winning. but I feel like, yeah, in, like, the long run, like, you remember, like, the people that you played with. You might not necessarily remember your record unless you're, like, Mike and love winning and probably remember all your records, right?
I probably, if you gave me some time, I probably could remember most of them. Yeah. I know in high school, senior year, I think we won 2 games, I think.
Okay, well, that's kind of easier to remember.
Why? Because
you only won 2 games.
Well, yeah, but we also did, I know in high school, our football team, I think my entire career in high school, I don't think we won a game in high school. I'm not sure, but yeah. Yeah. You got anything else about team chemistry? Nothing.
Nope.
We got it all out. There's nothing more we can talk about. Wow, dead silence. All right.
I could sit here all day if you want and wait for one of you guys to say something.
No, that's for our Platinum Plus junk baller.
Platinum Plus or Platinum Plus Premium?
I don't know. We'll have to talk about that off air.
All right. That's going to be one of our announcements coming up, guys. We're going to have a Junk Baller Plus package in the future. Ad free, uncensored,
even
uncut.
Though they don't have any ads for this. Yeah, so that finishes up our Junk Baller section where we're talking about what makes a good manager and team culture. Now, I'm just going to say it was my job to have a hot take to close us out, but I couldn't think of one. I could not think of a hot take for this night. Like, I was thinking about something with the White Sox. Like, yeah, they're going to finish with the worst record in Major League history, but I don't think that's much of a hot take.
It's not.
Oh, no, you know what? I know what it is. I know what I can do. I changed my mind about a hot take. That's what I'm going to do. You remember how you and I agree that every stadium should have a retractable roof?
Yes.
I don't know if I talked about this early in the podcast or not, but when I came back, so I was in Arizona. Mm-hmm. I went to go see the Phillies play in Arizona, and it was at Chase Field. And it's retractable roof. But they close it because it's blistering hot in Arizona. But when I was there, they didn't even have the AC on. It was still hot. It sucked. That stadium was okay. I liked it, but it was pretty mediocre. I don't like watching a game that is not outdoors. Walking into the, like, having a door to enter a stadium and then having it smell like plastic almost. I'm like, this feels like I'm walking into a mall. This doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel like baseball. So I've changed my mind on retractable roofs. I do not think that every stadium should have a retractable roof now.
So if you have the Phillies rain out a game in April and they have to play it again in August in the, like, at 1
that's
o'clock
fine.
In the afternoon and have a doubleheader.
I don't mind it.
That's okay.
I do not mind it as much because it ruins, retractable roofs ruin the vibe of baseball. Have you ever been to a retractable roof stadium?
I have not.
Okay. No. Have you been to any other stadium other than Citizens Bank?
I don't think so, actually.
Okay.
I want to, but I don't think
so. What stadium is, like, top on your list to go to?
Definitely Fenway. I want to go to the Orioles Stadium.
Yeah, Camden's great.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I'd love to go to the Yankee Stadium as well.
It's nice, too.
And Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been to all those. All of them are great. All of them are great. PNC, still up there for me, but I've been to 2 stadiums where the roof's been closed, and Tropicana is just horrible in general for Tampa. But there's just something about playing outdoors that just the smell is different, the feel, the vibe is different. It just didn't feel like a baseball game.
Would you have felt better if there was air conditioning?
I would have felt better, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I would have been more relaxed. But the thing is, the game wasn't, it didn't feel like a baseball game. And I think Pi said this when he went to Texas and the Globe Life Field. He's like, it just didn't feel like a baseball stadium.
Well, a lot of those are enclosed stadiums. I feel like the newer designs you're seeing for retractable roofs are not as enclosed. They're more like open air where you kind of just have the roof over the field itself.
Yeah, it's open. Yeah, like that's kind
of. Would you be more in favor of something like that?
No. I think I need to see the sky. I need to see the sky. I think there needs to be the weather in a, as a factor.
A see-through roof.
No. 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 I need it to be open. I need, if at least if the roof needs to be, if there's a retractable roof, it needs to be open. I'm tired. I'm tired.
So why have a retractable roof if it's just going to stay open?
If it's okay, if it's raining, then but have it open. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
know.
I agree with that.
Yeah, no, I don't want a roof. I don't want a roof. I'm changing my mind. This is why it's a hot take now. Apparently, like I don't want a retractable roof. I don't want dome stadiums. I want baseball should be played outside.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're just
laughing over there.
You could be wrong. It's okay.
No,
you're wrong about a lot of things.
No, that's not true at all. That's not true at all. And speaking of which, I am going to bring back my hot takes for Instagram. I'll make sure I send them to you.
Sounds great.
Get ready to unfollow.
Yeah. I actually brought it up during brunch yesterday with some of my friends that didn't know that I did it, and they got heated with some of them. They were like, "How you're so wrong about this." And it's going to be fun. Now, I believe all this stuff. Like, it's not just saying it just because, oh, yeah, like I want to get people riled up. No, I actually believe this. Like, when I went out to Arizona, I changed my mind. I've changed my mind about hot takes before, and this one changed my mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was my hot take. You didn't change your mind on a hot take. That was my hot take.
But I agreed with you.
Yeah. But you're saying it's like, oh, I changed my mind on a hot take.
Yeah, but anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
anything more that you'd like to add to the podcast before we close it out? Anything you wanted to get off your chest? Anything that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. I mean, thanks for having me, guys. This was fun. Yeah. I like talking to people who really know their stuff. Yeah. So it was fun to be on.
So you didn't like talking to Kev then?
Oh, wow. Wow. You're a great friend.
Yeah, I know. That's how friends, like guys, interact. Like we roast each other in person, and then behind closed doors, like, yeah, Kev's such a nice guy. Like that's just how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, can't live with him, can't live without him. Yeah. That's my philosophy.
Yeah, every time he wakes up, he's like, oh, crap. He walks by my door every day, he's like, oh, gosh, I have to deal with this guy in the morning. But I'm surprised you didn't roast me at all, you know? After hearing all my hot takes for like 9 months and my baseball opinions for 9 months back when I was at PT.
Well, that's true, yeah. I just remember the one with like cold pizza.
Pizza tastes better cold.
That is not true.
It's so true.
It's not.
It's so true.
It's not.
But yeah, I'm sure that I'm going to tell Phil about this. Phil was my PT for my shoulder recovery. And Tab, Phil and I had plenty of conversations about sports and Jalen Hurts and baseball. So I want to get him on the podcast because Phil knows
his stuff. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, thank you for being on. Yeah. Podcast. It was great having you.
Yes, thank you.
Hopefully everyone listening enjoyed the podcast. And I know we have Kev and I were really busy, and I was sick. I was gone for a week, and then I was sick for a week, and our schedules just were not working out at all. But
I was thinking of having my Jeter is a Superstar podcast without you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just we're totally solo.
We did put out a poll about what type of podcast people would like, and the one that won was Kevin and I having differing opinions. So we were trying to think about what do we have differing opinions on, and I said one for sure is that Derek Jeter was not a superstar. That's something that I claim to know as fact, and Kev disagrees. So maybe we'll have a podcast on that, but maybe Kevin and I will think of some stuff that we disagree on, and we'll think of some podcast we can do. Mm. But I know we had fun, Tab, so thank you again for being on the show, and hope you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you next time.
Catch you later.